Welcome to Locked On 49ers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Happy Friday to everybody out there. The Javon Kinlaw episode. I've got a scouting report. Javon Kinlaw, the number 14 overall pick in the 2020 draft by your San Francisco 49ers. Who is he? Bio, strengths, weaknesses, team fit. What position is he going to play? What can he do? What can he not do? The full scouting report. This entire episode devoted to the latest 49ers first-round draft pick, Javon Kinlaw. And let's start with this. If you listened to the Locked On NFL mock draft special a couple weeks ago, you might have heard our vignettes on every player selected in the first round that were done by our college hosts. So since I have that on file, let's go to first the commish, then the college profile from Matt Smith of Locked On Gamecocks.
With the 14th pick in the 2020 NFL draft, the San Francisco 49ers select Javon Kinlaw, defensive tackle, South Carolina.
Javon Kinlaw, All-American defensive tackle, South Carolina. Kinlaw tallied 6 sacks and was generally a disruptive force for the Gamecocks throughout his junior and senior seasons, most notably in an upset over Georgia. Kinlaw harassed Jake Fromm throughout that game, and his pressure helped lead the defense to 4 turnovers, including a pick 6 late in that game. In his 4 years at Carolina, Kinlaw played his best against his stiffest competition. This behemoth was also disruptive in special teams. Kinlaw blocked 3 kicks in his career. He affected numerous others. Also exhibited dedication to his craft. He dropped 40 pounds, transformed his body during his sophomore season. So that shows you what he can do when he puts his mind to it. Kinlaw had flirted with declaring for the draft after his junior season, but returned for his senior campaign and really boosted his stock due to some jaw-dropping performances against quality blockers like Georgia that we just mentioned. Now, what do you do when a jumbo athlete like Kinlaw gets that 6'5", 330-pound frame rolling in the right direction? Well, mostly you can just pray and hope. He's also cat-quick, ox-strong. His build and abilities could fit him inside in a 4-3 or even outside in a 3-4 alignment. Only concerns for Kinlaw are that high-maintenance body, and did he in fact disappear against lesser competition, or was he just engaged in double teams? Well, NFL evaluators can decide that through their film study. It does speak well of Kinlaw that he won the team's Unselfish Teammate Award, perhaps meaning he wasn't as inconsistent as some observers believe, as much as he was eating up multiple blockers to free up his teammates. If Kinlaw's weight issues are behind him, there's really little that can stop this Goliath from being effective in the NFL against the run and as a factor in the pass rush. This is Matt Smith for Locked On Gamecocks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
You heard about some of the accolades there for Javon Kinlaw. We'll get to the weight thing in a minute because I think that's a pretty important part of the entire evaluation for Javon Kinlaw. And when you're getting drafted at 14 overall, there's obviously a lot of strength. So a lot of strengths, a few weaknesses, what we could project out, and the outlook for Javon Kinlaw as a San Francisco 49er. A lot has been reported on about the background for Javon Kinlaw. Really an amazing story. Spent some time homeless as a young man, bounced between mother and father in the D.C. area, and then Goose Creek, South Carolina, decided to stay home to go to college after a year at junior college. But let's hear Kinlaw himself, when he was at the Senior Bowl, tell his own story.
Well, my mother from Trinidad and Tobago with my 2 older brothers, just growing up in Northeast Washington, D.C., pretty much homeless, living in basements. Well, we went without electricity, no water, things like that. We had to use the neighbor's hose to fill up totes of water. We would take them back in the house. We had gas stove. You would light the stove with a little match or something. Get a tall pot. Boil the water, mix it with some cold water, put it in a bucket, take it upstairs, take a shower like that. But at a young age, we just thought that was normal, you know. That's how we was living. We didn't know how everybody else was living, but we knew that's how we was living. And we was cool with that, you know what I'm saying, especially me. But now that I look back at it, it was tough, man. But it made me a man, you know, at a young age. Grew up early, definitely. So it was, like I said, man, I didn't think that it was that bad, you know. That's when I was so used to it.
And just going through JUCO ball, just like, what did you learn from that entire experience going JUCO?
you just can't give up on yourself. Times definitely get rough. I didn't, like Jalen said, I didn't really expect myself to even be here. You know, I didn't expect myself to be a collegiate athlete. You know, but I stuck it out. You know, I stuck with it, staying in JUCO. Fun fact, my first 2 days there, I didn't even eat because I didn't know where the calf was at. And then I didn't know the food was free. So when I found out, I found out it was free, I was going crazy. But,
maybe a little insight there into why he showed up 340 pounds at South Carolina. But as alluded to in the college profile there, got his weight down to, you know, 305, 308 range. His weight has fluctuated, which is still a worry. He was 315 at the Senior Bowl, then he was 10 pounds heavier at the Combine. So obviously that can fluctuate quickly for a guy that big. He wears his weight really well, though, just with his body type, and he doesn't look like he's a guy who's, you know, he's not a fat guy. He doesn't have a fat guy body, especially in the upper body. It's kind of crazy. He's got broad shoulders, these huge long arms. He basically has legs for arms, too, which is another crazy aspect. We'll get more into his physical ability in a second, but just want to get into the rest of his, you know, stats and stuff and in his background. So went the junior college route, even though he was being recruited by some Power Five conferences. And at the time it was Steve Spurrier at South Carolina that was recruiting him. He wasn't going to be eligible. So had to do the year at junior college and did what he needed to do to get himself ready to go play. And Will Muschamp, when he took over South Carolina, kept that offer for him. So he ended up staying home, close to home at South Carolina. He had some other offers, I think USC and a couple of others. Was it Florida, Alabama, maybe even? So yeah, he could have gone a lot of directions, but he stayed at home. And you could look at that as a positive or negative. There was some maturity issues and some things that popped up with him. Looking into his background, and you hear whispers from scouts and people talk about, you know, the maturity levels of guys. And he talked about there how he had to grow up fast. So I don't know if it's a maturity issue or if it's an issue of him just growing up different than a lot of guys. And so maybe, you know, the transition into a big time college football program and into, you know, that college athlete and just the normal college lifestyle might have been somewhat difficult. And, you know, he stayed close to home there. So there's probably still going to be a bit of a transition period for wherever he will. Him going to San Francisco now, going to a much different environment and much different place in the country to go live. So don't think it's going to be a problem or anything like that. But, you know, it's just a transition into the NFL is not always as easy as, oh, this is a great player, plug him in, boom. I mean, there's a life going on aside from football. So all of those things have to come together in nutrition and how he stays in shape. And now with these players that don't go straight into the team and get that immediate rookie mini camp and just get right into the system and into the NFL team's program, you know, it might have to be a quicker transition. It's going to be tough, I think, for a lot of rookies this year, both on and off the field as they transition into the team environment and into their new cities when training camp and the season actually does get rolling. Okay, we'll look at his PFF grades coming up, strengths, weaknesses, and what I believe is the most likely outlook for Javon Kinlaw over the course of his rookie contract with the 49ers. From an early morning breakfast burrito to a 12-pack of beers while you watch the game, sometimes you just need what you need delivered fast. And yeah, getting those beverages on top of dinner is key. And if you're like me, you probably start thinking about what you want to eat for dinner while you're eating lunch. You love food. That's why you'll love Postmates. They deliver food from every restaurant I can think of right to my door. But Postmates doesn't just deliver burgers and sushi. They actually make life easier with grocery deliveries, convenience stores, clothing stores, you name it. So no more trips to the store, which is so key right now. No more late night fast food runs. You don't have to worry about where you're going to grab lunch. Just download Postmates on iOS or Android, find your favorites, and get anything you want delivered within the hour. For a limited time, Postmates is giving our listeners $100 of free delivery credit for your first 7 days. To start your free deliveries, download the app and use code LOCKEDONNFL. That's code LOCKEDONNFL for $100 of free delivery credit with no minimum purchase for your first 7 days when you download the Postmates app. Anything you need, anytime you need it, Postmate it. depending where you look, most places had him listed as, you know, 6'6", 300 pounds, 305 pounds, something like that. But it's clear he's a lot heavier than that, at least now. And so it's hard to know if the player we were seeing on the field, if that was closer to 305 or the 325 that he was showed, or 324 that he showed up at the NFL Combine. So that's an interesting question that I'm sure teams had for Javon Kinlaw when they were doing their background work. 6'5 and 1/8, but he plays to 6'6". He plays to that length with his super long arms. I mean, he's a very large human being. 6'5 and 1/8, 324 pounds, nearly 35-inch arm length, 83-inch wingspan. So this is a large man, and he has the size that you could see how he could put on a lot of weight, because he has room to even grow bigger, which is a good thing, but also, like I mentioned, could be a little bit of worry. More about weight and stuff like that later. Senior Bowl practice standout. That was his, you know, final hurrah, because he didn't get a chance to work out at the combine. So no combine numbers, no testing numbers. We don't really get to compare him athletically as far as testing goes to any of these other defensive tackle prospects that we've seen in recent years. But a standout in practices at the Senior Bowl, and then his week got cut short because of some knee tendonitis issues, and he didn't actually play in the game. But the practices are more important to the game, and he was definitely dominating practices, was clearly the best player at the Senior Bowl when he showed up there in January. Not huge sack production, more of a disruptor than a sack collector at South Carolina. He had 6 sacks in his senior season. If you're looking at his PFF grades, they give him 7 sacks. They don't count half sacks at Pro Football Focus. So credit for 7 sacks there. But a really good grade overall. And his grade grew between 2017 and 2019, his 3 years at South Carolina after that one season at junior college. So a 74.1 grade, according to Pro Football Focus in 2017. Then that jumped to 85. Then it jumped to 89.4. And what's surprising about a guy who's that big is his pass rush disruption was better than his run defending, which is why a lot of people even maybe like Javon Kinlaw better than Derek Brown, because they thought there was more pass rush upside with Kinlaw, even though he only had the 6 sacks in his senior season. He played 625 snaps in 2019 at South Carolina. 352 of those snaps were against the pass, 273 against the run. Yeah, college programs throw the ball quite a lot. 13 run stops. He had the 7 sacks according to PFF. Again, they don't count half sacks. 7 quarterback hits, 26 hurries. And he had a 90.7 pass rush grade in 2019, according to Pro Football Focus, which is a really good number. So disruptor, a lot of pressures more so than sacks. And you can see it when you watch him on film. He is a game wrecker. You see his... And it's the whole play, which is really exciting about Javon Kinlaw, because it starts with the snap and his get off for such a big man. Like, he explodes out of his stance, and you can see it when he's fresher and early in games. He just leaps out of his stance, and he immediately puts the offensive lineman in a bind because they have to respect his power. And then at times he can show some good technique. He doesn't always show it, but all of a sudden he'll throw this swim move on you and give you a move with quickness. And offensive linemen aren't ready for it because they have to prepare for this huge man that's leaping at him that can bull rush him straight back into the quarterback. But that's his number one move, is the bull rush. You see him walk offensive linemen back to the quarterback numerous times, and it's just so impressive. I mean, this guy is just a raw physical monster. It's pretty crazy. I talked earlier about how he has legs for arms too. Not only lengthwise, but strengthwise, it's just so strong. He locks out his arms and it's done. I mean, he's just got offensive linemen when he gets his hand on him and locks out. It's interesting because as tall as he is, he does a pretty good job of staying low most of the time, but it can almost get him in trouble with how low he tries to be. Sometimes he gets caught with his head down because he's trying to beat the man in front of him, and he's firing off and he's got his arms locked out and he's controlling the guy and he's really low to the ground, but then he's looking at the ground, and so a play could run right by him because he's doesn't have his head up. But if he plays too upright, then that can allow shorter guards and centers to get underneath him and then move him out of the way. So he's got to find that happy medium of where he's still got his head in the backfield and he's got his eye on the ball and he's focused on the play and what's happening, but also he's still got leverage and still controlling the man in front of him. I think that's just going to come with time and more reps and more technique. So there is a little bit of raw to his game, and he can definitely add a ton of polish. And when he does, if he does, I mean, look out, the sky's the limit for how big and powerful he is and how springy he is and how explosive he is out of his stance. And then occasionally he'll show you that swim move or, you know, give you a lateral move with quickness. And you're like, oh my God, you've got to block that too, on top of that raw power and that bull rush that he has. So very explosive man. And if he puts it all together, and by the way, according to PFF, his pass rush win rate, and again, pass rush wins are pressures, not just sacks for Pro Football Focus. His pass rush win rate was second among qualifying tackles in this draft class. Missouri's Jordan Elliott was the only one ahead of him. His win rate was 18.1% as an interior defensive lineman. Looking at his stats, the couple years prior to 2019, his first year at South Carolina, 2017, didn't have any sacks, had a couple tackles for loss. In 2018, his junior year, he had 10 tackles for loss, 4.5 sacks, really burst onto the scene there in his junior season, started all 12 games, and was awarded the Joe Morrison Award, which is the Defensive Player of the Year for South Carolina, then became a first-team All-American in 2019, 6 tackles for loss, 6 sacks, a couple passes defense, batting the ball down with those long arms. He blocked kicks with those long arms as well. He was also the Joe Morrison Award winner again 2 years in a row as South Carolina's Defensive Player of the Year, and is also a team captain as a senior in 2019. So I mentioned how he wears his weight well. This is something that blew me away for somebody who's over 300 pounds, is he only had 16% body fat. So to me, that tells me, you know, maybe he's got the type of genetics that make him a large human being. And if he's not doing what he needs to do in the off season, you might get a little bit worried. He shows up to training camp 340, which he did his sophomore year in college. But the fact that he put the work in to get down to the low 300s from the 340s, and the fact that he worked his way in the weight room, and there's a viral video of him online where he did some squat. I'm not a weightlifting guy, but he basically did a squat where he had a belt that was attached to the squat machine, but then also some other players standing on it. So apparently it was 2,000 pounds total worth of weight attached to his belt, and to me, it looked like something that he probably should not be screwing around with doing, that he could hurt himself doing, but just squatting an absurd amount of weight, and you can tell he puts in work. So there's a work ethic there, which with any prospect, if you're smart and tough and you have a work ethic and you have that much talent, I mean, you know, how can you go wrong? So it tells me there is a work ethic there, the way he worked his body into shape when he was at South Carolina, and you can see how it's not bad weight on his body, and he got his body fat percentage down to only 16%. I mean, that's pretty amazing. So that makes me feel like he can reach the massive ceiling that he has as a player, and he's already a pretty darn good player in his own right. There are some weaknesses, though, when it comes to Javon Kinlaw, some things he can get better at, some things that when you look at the total package and a prospect that you're drafting, you're not just drafting traits, you're drafting the entire human being, the entire package, and there is some things that could be roadblocks in the way of him reaching his ceiling and him potentially not being maybe worth the 14th pick in the NFL draft. We'll get to those things next, and what I think, and that's a much shorter list than some of his strengths that I talked about. By the way, I didn't really talk enough about how he could play and his usage and what he can do within the defense, so I'll get to some of that stuff next. So it's a short list, but what are the weaknesses when it comes to Javon Kinlaw? I've talked a lot about the weight, so we don't have to go much there. As long as he's motivated, keeps himself in shape, because look, you don't want to draft a nose tackle at 14 overall in the first round of the NFL draft, right? You don't need a one technique. You need a three technique. You need a guy who can pass rush, a guy who can move, who keeps that explosive ability, keeps that quick twitch ability to get off the line of scrimmage, immediately put pressure on offensive linemen, use that lateral movement skills where you can use him on stunts and bring him around, or just let him beat his man one-on-one with both power and explosiveness. So you want him to keep that. So I am guessing that the 49ers don't want him any more than 315 pounds or so. When the last time we saw him on a field at the Senior Bowl dominating people, I think the 49ers probably don't want him any bigger than that. So That's the number one thing is nutrition and work and weight room stuff and making sure he stays in shape and keeps his body where it needs to be, because that could go fast. You know, if he goes from 315 to 324 between the Senior Bowl and the Combine, that 324 could become 340 again very quickly by the time teams actually get a chance to reconvene at training camp, whenever that happens. Hopefully that happens this summer. Injuries is probably the big one, even more than worries about his weight and the fact that he had to leave the Senior Bowl with some knee tendonitis, the fact that that could be a long-term issue, seeing the 49ers right now dealing with Dee Ford, who's got a similar issue and a chronic knee tendonitis issue. If that starts to derail his snap count and means that you can't employ him as much as you want to, and you shouldn't expect that he's going to play as many snaps as DeForest Buckner, but if he's missing games and you have to have a lot of maintenance on his knee, and that might affect his ability to stay in shape both during the season and during the offseason, that could be a big problem. And that's why you see players fall on draft day. And I think we saw a ton of players that should have gone day two talent-wise that fell into day three of the NFL draft because teams weren't able to do rechecks. And there were rumors about teams that didn't feel comfortable about Javon Kinlaw in the first round because they couldn't get his hands on him and their doctors couldn't examine him and they couldn't do those rechecks with him, because you're putting that many resources into a player, that much time, effort, and a high draft pick, that's a lot of value to drop into a guy where you're not sure. John Lynch said that his medical people and the 49ers staff felt good about the knees and where he's at injury-wise, but that's probably the number one thing that could keep Javon Kinlaw from reaching his ceiling and being the player the 49ers think they got at 14 is injuries. And there's 100% injury rate in the NFL, so you know, you hope there's not more injuries on top of something that could make that even worse. If it's a knee tendonitis issue that's going to continue, or maybe it's nothing. Maybe he was over it and it was, you know, a long season. You're playing extra games. You're playing extra practices at the Senior Bowl after the season's over, and he just needed a little bit of a rest and he'll be all good. Hopefully that's the only minor issue for Javon Kinlaw as far as injuries go. But it wasn't his only injury issue. He had a hip labrum surgery as well in 2018. So multiple injuries, and you start to mount those up, and it's just a little bit of a worry. It's just something that you have to check out. The 49ers did whatever due diligence they could there, and you hope injuries aren't an issue for him going forward. As far as on the field, what kind of weaknesses does he have? Well, his length works for him, but it can also work against him. And this was one of the weaknesses of DeForest Buckner coming out of college too, was just when you're that tall, playing upright sometimes. And I think it might be conditioning, you know, later in games, you get a little bit more tired. There are times when it looks like he's not taking a play off until the play's gone away from him, and then he kind of just kicks it with the offensive lineman that's with him, and he's like, yeah, you know what, we're gonna both stop right now, and this play's kind of over and it's on that side of the field, let's just kick it. So conditioning that kind of ties into weight and some of those things, and leverage, getting upright at times. So he's got to work on, I mentioned this already, staying low but not so low that his head isn't up, and then he's got to make sure he does keep leverage and he's not upright where guys can, there's few times in the running game where, and this is one of the things that surprised me about him, was he's better against the pass than the run, because against the pass, and this is where he fits in so well with Chris Kocurek's defense, because he wants guys to attack and he wants you to get upfield and be a menace in the backfield, which is exactly what Javon Kinlaw can do and probably what he enjoys doing. Because against the run, when he's got to think a little bit and maybe, you know, two gap and things like that, offensive linemen can get it in, can get underneath him, can turn him. I think he has to think a little bit, and he's not in attack mode, and that's not his strength. So, you know, minor questions about instincts because of that too. Because when it's an obvious game plan for him, he's really good. But when he has to make a secondary pass rush move or make another move or read and react to the play, it's, things slow down and things aren't as dominating for him. So I think reps, you hope he can get there, and you hope it's not just a pure instincts problem with him. And look, it's not a problem because he's so disruptive and he's such a monster. Like, he's going to get better and he's going to be so good. But there are a few weaknesses that I had to point out here. And he needs to work on counters with the pass rush move, which is pretty much true of every single pass rusher coming out of college. It's really, really rare that you get a Nick Bosa that is pro ready and literally as a rookie giving veterans on his team pointers about hand usage and different techniques and things like that. I mean, that just doesn't happen. So yeah, sky's the limit for Javon Kinlaw as far as a player. His explosive ability at his size and his strength is truly special. If he can add polish to his game, stay healthy, stay on the field, stay in shape, he's going to be a monster on the inside of that 49ers defense. The only other quibble I would have with a pick that high is positional value. A defensive tackle versus a defensive end, and that ties in with the final bit I want to talk about here, which is projecting him going forward and the outlook for him as a 49er long term, because I think he fits right into what Chris Kocurek does. I think he's going to plug into DeForest Buckner's spot probably from the first snap of the season. Won't play as many snaps. You know, they'll probably rotate him in quite a bit. Could move him around. He's athletic enough that you could put him on some edge. You could put him one tech, three tech, five technique. You know, you could run stunts and do everything you need to do on defense with Javon Kinlaw. But his position is going to be that three technique. He can be so disruptive early in his career, and he's so big and strong that he should be good on rundowns, and he won't be asked to be a one technique in the 49ers defense, which I think is really good for him, at least very often, and on base downs very often, with DJ Jones in there doing that dirty work. So he can, you know, fight one blocker and try to physically dominate that human being more often and shoot gaps and try to get upfield and play the run on the way to the quarterback. So if he does hit, what does that look like contract-wise? What does that look like roster-wise for the 49ers? And this is one of the reasons that, and value-wise, it was perfect. So I had Javon Kinlaw as my number 14 overall player going into the draft, and they drafted him 14. So there's players I had ahead of him that were still on the board at 14, but look, value-wise, I have no problem with it. They drafted the 14th player, according to me, at 14. And if you look everywhere, pretty much all the analysts had him in that mid first round range, some a couple spots later. Some analysts even liked him better than Derek Brown because of pass rush potential and had him maybe even as a top 10 player. But value is fine. This is my only worry long term. If he does hit, now you've got to pay a defensive tackle, and the 49ers just wanted to not do that with DeForest Buckner. I mean, ideally, I guess you could have 4 years of monster production from on a rookie contract for a player and then trade him again for, you know, a 2024 first round pick. I mean, I guess that would be pretty cool too. But just looking ahead, so you got to pay Bosa. Then the next year, you've got to pay Kinlaw. By then, D Ford will be long gone, so you don't have to worry about that money. But you're already paying a lot of money to Arik Armstead. So can you pay Armstead and Kinlaw and Bosa? And there's people that want to bring Joey Bosa in. If Joey wants to come play for the 49ers, you at least got to explore ways to pay for him. And even if you're not paying Joey Bosa, which I don't think the 49ers will be able to financially work out, and Joey's going to get the franchise tag anyway, so now you've got to trade for him. It doesn't make a lot of sense in 2021 to be able to go get Joey Bosa, even if he wants to come play with his brother. With the 49ers, maybe 2022 makes more sense if he plays out a year with the franchise tag, but let's not go down that road right now. At some point, you've got to find another replacement for D Ford. If Kinlaw hits, that probably means, and who knows, maybe Arik Armstead was never going to see the end of his contract anyway, because in reality, with how often teams are in nickel, at least 50% of the time, more like 60, 70% of the time, Arik Armstead is going to be a tackle next to Kinlaw inside. So in 3 years, are you going to pay Bosa what he deserves, Nick Bosa? And then you've already got Armstead on the books, and then you have to pay Kinlaw the year after that. How are you going to pay that other defensive end? Because I don't think D Ford's going to be around for a whole lot longer because how few snaps he plays for what he's getting paid. And in fact, 2020 might be D Ford's last year with the 49ers. And if that's the case, can you afford then to spend another first-round pick on a defensive end on that side, pay a free agent defensive end to come in and take D Ford's spot? So it is a question about team building, about paying defensive tackles. You're paying one guy who's at least 50%, and I would consider more than 50% a defensive tackle in Arik Armstead. Now you've got a first-round guy inside that beyond the value of his rookie contract. And could you have covered DeForest Buckner without spending a first-round draft pick? Could you have plugged the hole with a big run stuffing defensive tackle on early downs and then filtered through a lot of the players the 49ers already have as interior pass rushers and gotten the job done that way without spending a prime draft pick on another defensive tackle? And I'd rather be weak at tackle than end. And I'd rather have a rotation at tackle than try to figure out and tape things together at defensive end. We've seen how that works with edge rushers. The defense was non-functional before they brought in Bosa and Ford. And that was with Buckner. Again, and these are things that, these are first world problems, right? These are good team problems, because that means you've got to pay a whole bunch of people a whole bunch of money because you've got a lot of good players. And that means Javon Kinlaw was a hit. It doesn't really matter. If he's good enough to where you're worried about how much money you have to pay him, that means it was a really good draft pick. So the 49ers hit a home run with it, even if that is the case. But just looking down the road, thinking about how you build the team, how you build the defensive line, I know you want to keep it a strength. And if you draft another first-round defensive end next year to replace Dee Ford, at some point you've got to run into that same crunch that you did with DeForest Buckner and Eric Armstead, and you have to worry about how you're going to pay guys, and then you might have to let some of them go eventually if they're all really good and really expensive. And by the way, the latest news, 2017 first-round pick Solomon Thomas, his fifth-year option has been declined by the 49ers. So good chance this is his last year with the 49ers. Has an opportunity still to stick, though. It doesn't mean he can't sign a new deal with the 49ers after this year, but it just means the fifth-year option not picked up. Now the final year of Solomon Thomas's rookie contract. And that is Javon Kinlaw. Good pick, really good player, talented, high upside, mountain of a human being, keeping the 49ers ratio of tall guys intact after the loss of DeForest Buckner should be a problem and a game wrecker for opposing defenses for years to come. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Be back next week breaking down Brandon Ayuk and the rest of the 49ers rookies right here, Locked On 49ers.